Welcome to the Teach, Lead, Innovate podcast, where we dive deep into the heart of innovation, leadership, and transformative ideas shaping the future of education and technology. Each episode is a journey into the minds of visionary educators, thinkers, and leaders who are not just talking about change, they're living it. Real people leading real change. This is where passion meets practice and ideas come to life. Welcome to the Teach, Lead, Innovate podcast. Welcome, everyone, to another episode of the Teach, Lead, Innovate podcast. I'm so excited to welcome to the podcast Stefan Jolie, a preschool to eighth grade principal at Oak Ridge Private School. In education for 23 years, Mr. Jolie has been a principal for 10 of those years. With master's and PhD work in cross-cultural education and leadership, Mr. Jolie's main focus is creating a loving educational environment where his students feel safe and loved. And since 2018, another passion has been educating his community on the dangers of kids with smartphones and social media. He's had phone-free classrooms since 2018 and believes smartphones do not belong in the classroom. I am super excited to dig into this during today's episode. Welcome to the Teach, Lead, Innovate podcast, Stefan.
Thank you, Dave. I'm so excited to be here. This is so cool we get to do this. These podcasts are so much fun, and I'm looking forward to digging into all the questions.
I agree. Awesome. So glad to have you on today. So just start off, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and how'd you get into the field of education?
Absolutely. So back in college, I went to Cal State University Polytechnic Pomona, and I started as a pre-vet student. So I was in the pre-vet program. And throughout, at the beginning of college, I also, like many of us, had jobs in college. And I was invited to be a water polo coach at my local high school, actually the high school that I went to, and started coaching. And actually just fell in love with coaching, fell in love with being on the pool deck with the kids. And my head coach that I was working with was also my head coach, and I played water polo there at my school, pulled me aside one day and said, you know, I really think you should consider teaching. You have a great command of the class, or great command of the pool deck. You're great with the kids. You understand how to work with all of them and really get along well. And even back then, I was about 22, 23 years old. Said, even as young as you are, I would fully trust you on the pool deck with these kids because you are so responsible with them, and you do such a great job. So I really think you should consider teaching. It's a great profession. He had been a teacher for 40 years at that point. He ended up actually, Coach Erlich, shout out to him. He ended up being the head coach at the Air Force Academy in Colorado. And then he retired. But anyway, I really took his advice and really thought about it. And at the time, being a pre-vet student, well, side story, I was right in the middle of OCHEM, which I'm sure a lot of like pre-med students and vet students can relate to walking into OCHEM. I think I was in my second or third week of OCHEM, and I thought, you know, I don't think this is for me. So two things happened. I had one person as a mentor telling me I should consider teaching, and I was sitting in OCHEM and thinking, I don't think this is the right path for me. So I continued coaching and changed my majors to physical education with a pedagogy option. Finished my degree at Cal Poly Pomona and went straight into a credential program, a master's program, and got hired right away at a public school district. I taught middle school PE for a couple of years and loved it. And after actually 1 year of teaching public school and teaching PE and being involved in the public school through coaching, I stayed coaching public school water polo for a good 7-8 years, but moved over to the Friday set. I was invited at that point. I was coaching some boys at the varsity level, and one of their parents was a principal of a private school, and she invited me over to her campus. I took a tour of the campus. She had a science position open at that time, and just fell in love with it. The class sizes, the climate, the campus itself, the people on campus were so kind. And I just saw myself there. And that was way back in 2002. So I've been here ever since. I taught math and science on campus here at my school. And moved into an athletic director position after a couple of years. And then moved into a middle school principal position in 2007. And then took over as head of school in 2014. So during all that time, continued in education, worked on PhD work in cross-cultural education and leadership, finished, admin credentials, tier two credentials, all of our stuff that goes along with it. But really all the credentials and all the master's degrees, I really just support it. But being a great teacher just means you're invested in kids and you love being around the kids. That's how I got involved with teaching and getting into admin. That's how it all evolved. But I just love doing what I do and being with the kids, being with teachers, mentoring teachers, and doing things like this, being on a podcast with another great mentor. It's a small world when it comes to being a school administrator and working with school admin at all different schools, at all different levels. So, yeah, there it is in a nutshell.
That's awesome. You've done quite a bit. You've been quite a bit over the years. What really propelled you to pursue educational leadership and become a head of school?
So when I first started teaching, I had a school administrator that she wasn't necessarily, I would say, the best administrator for me, being a brand new teacher. I did need that support from a mentor and did need some guidance as a first year teacher, second year teacher, and I didn't get that. I really felt let down as a first year teacher and really had to dig deep and find support amongst my co-teachers. So as I was teaching, and I ended up having another principal at my private school that was very supportive and very, very much in a mentor role, mentoring new teachers and help all of us as teachers be the best we could be. And that at that point, I made a decision to go into a role of administration to be that type of principal that helps new teachers especially, and to foster the love of learning and the love of teaching in those teachers by being a great supportive administrator. Wow, there's so much we can do as administrators to help keep the enthusiasm of teaching in those teachers by being supportive and just being a sounding board and being open to just listening. So many teachers come in and just want to fucking share ideas. And instead of opening my mouth and giving my opinion, I just sit and listen. And I think that's such a great chance for them to really hear themselves and hear themselves think through their difficulties, through their passion of teaching, and just give them as much support as I can. So that's really how I started to get into admin, was to change how I was, to make a change, because I didn't have a great administrator when I first started teaching. So I wanted to be a great administrator for new teachers.
So I think there's two amazing parts of that. Number one, you became the person that you would have wanted when you were younger on in your career. And secondly, you talked about being a sounding board for your teachers. And I would say that really only happens when you have a good culture in your school. And so I think that speaks a lot to what you must have in your building as well. What would you say when we talk about school culture, what do you think are some of the most important parts of that? Like, what do you think makes a great school?
There's so many facets to that that makes the school culture atmosphere of having a positive school atmosphere. I think it starts every day in the morning. Greeting the parents, greeting the students as they're walking into school, and being that person at the front of the school that always has a smile on their face, no matter what the weather is, no matter what's happening in the world, we are a place that is welcoming and loving and the students know that they're going to have a great day. So I think it starts as the kids are walking through the front doors of the school, knowing that they're going to have a great day because they're greeted with people who know, love them, and know they're going to do the best for them. And then throughout the day, being present with the kids, even to the point of putting on my tennis shoes and playing basketball with the middle school boys, or playing volleyball with the kids, whatever it is, you know, showing them that I'm a real person. I'm not just behind a desk pushing papers. I'm out there at one time with them. I'm, you know, visiting classrooms. And I tell the teachers, I'm not visiting classrooms to check on them. Mm-hmm. I've hired great teachers. I trust them every day to make the best decisions for their kids. I'm showing up in classrooms to support them, because they always say, as soon as you walk into the classroom, you can hear a dime drop. And if that means that they're, you know, whatever time of day they're struggling with some chattiness in the classroom, and I walk in and all that goes away, great. That's just one more way I can support them. Or I can say, hey, do you want to step out and just go fill up your coffee mug? I'll teach you a lesson for a second. You know, walk in, teach a math lesson, or walk in and read to the kids. So they all know that they're being supported as teachers, but then the students see me as somebody that is there for them and supportive, but also just a positive role model. So all of that creates a positive atmosphere in the classroom, and having great parents as well, supportive parents, mm-hmm. having a great PTA, they know that they can come to me. I have an open door policy that anything comes up, I try to be that yes man, you know. Can we do this? Oh, of course. Can we do that? Sure we can.
It's refreshing to hear yes.
It is. It's for teachers and parents, you know. It's refreshing to hear yes, we can do that. So whenever you have a teacher come in and say, hey, I have an idea, can I do this? Of course you can. Let's try it. What's the worst that could happen?
Exactly.
Right. Right. So I think just creating a positive culture, and just having, you know, having great people around you as a school administrator, you want to hire great teachers, and you have a great staff, support staff, my counseling staff, my maintenance staff, everybody around you, just always working together, always communicating and being positive. So when the kids see a positive environment like that, they're going to be happy.
100%. So what do you love most about being a principal?
I think what I love most about being a principal is walking into the classrooms, and it's a little distracting to the teachers, and I feel bad sometimes. When I walk into the classrooms to say hi or just to visit a classroom, there's always a couple students that just get up and run over to me and want to hug. And sometimes the teacher's in the middle of a lesson. I feel bad, but at the same time, I think it just shows the teachers and shows everybody that, look, this is the environment that we want. We want them to feel safe. We want them to be excited to be here and know that everybody on campus is here to support the students, even to the point of, unfortunately, disrupting their class. And when I come into the class and say hi, just to come in and say hi, there's two or three to get up and run over to give me a hug. I love that. It gives you such a great feeling to be here with so many great students and teachers. And, you know, being a principal isn't about me. It's about what we do on a campus. It's always about, it's the bigger picture of creating a community. It's so focused on learning and learning about each other and being respectful and being kind, all those things that make great citizens in a community. So really, as administrators, we're building the next generation of citizens. And whatever we can do to make that a positive experience so these students grow to be great citizens and be kind to other people, that's a great thing that you can do.
I think that was so powerful what you just said about, you know, as administrators, building up citizens. Like, I don't even know if you know how powerful that was, but that was pretty powerful. It's definitely gonna stick with me, and I agree. You know, oftentimes I'll go into, you're welcome, going to a classroom and the kids run up. And yeah, I do feel bad. And I oftentimes go in and say, I'm sorry, I can be trusted to disrupt classroom instruction sometimes. But I think, as you said, it goes a long way to fostering that community of care and love that we want. You know, we want for my own kids and you want for your girls, you know? So I am excited to dig into your philosophy on cell phones. Okay.
Yeah.
Why do you believe they don't have a place in the classroom? What do you think?
Well, I think, you know, all of us now as adults and the age that where I'm not that old, but we grew up and I started teaching back when MySpace, you know, to the early 2000s when MySpace came out, and seeing everything evolve, and then iPhones came out in like 2007. All of a sudden we have these devices that are so powerful, and the evolution of the internet and the information highway, the access to pretty much anything online, seeing that in a classroom, but also seeing how kids are being handed these devices that are so powerful and addictive. So not many people know this, and being school administrators, we meet parents all the time and we find out what our parents do as for their profession. Some of we have doctors on campus, we have lawyers as parents, we have mechanics, we have so many different trades on our campus as parents. And some of those parents do work in the tech industry and do work with companies that create apps. And I actually sat with a parent way back in 2017, 2018, and he was telling me that they, you know, they do create these apps to be addictive on purpose. They build these apps to act the same way that a drug would react within your body, to have the addictive tendencies. So the most influential people to that type of feeling and to those the chemical reactions in our body are kids. So the video gaming, the apps, the social media, they're all designed specifically to be addicted. So the kids want to come back constantly to it. They're constantly looking at it and they're being drawn to it like a drug. So when I'm sitting there with a parent telling me, even to the point of these parents or these employees of the companies are paying for these developers to take psychological courses in addiction, to learn about addiction. So when companies like Meta and Facebook and Twitter and the game designers are teaching their coders how to create addiction, that's trouble. And when you know, you hear all that, and then we see it every day. We take our families to the restaurants and you see a table with a family and they all have their cell phones out. Dad has his cell phone out, mom's got her cell phone out, they have devices in their hands. And we're losing that connection. We're losing that opportunity as parents to be with our, to be present with our kids. So the more we're seeing screens in front of our kids and the data to support it, now the past 2-3 years, we're seeing so much data coming back saying how dangerous screen time is for our kids. So there's all these missiles hitting us as parents and as kids, addiction to cell phones, addiction to smart devices, addiction to gaming, addiction to social media. The one place we can control as school administrators is our campus. So why not make our classrooms a phone-free place? There's so much data. We actually had, you've probably seen this, there was a teacher that actually took let the students have their cell phones in a high school classroom, and she recorded every notification, every text message, every message that her students got in her classroom in one hour class period. Why in a high school classroom? There was over 700 notifications. in an hour. So these phones are going off in their pockets. They're going off in their laps. They're going off on their desk. They're going on constantly. How can a student concentrate when a device is in their pocket or on their desk, wherever, constantly giving them notifications? Hey, look at me, look at me, look at me. That's what's happening to these kids. So it's constantly drawing them away from the learning that's happening in their classroom. And on top of that, you have a teacher that's trying their best to teach a lesson. And they're constantly fighting against that cell phone. So there's all those different things going on. So we as administrators can make the decision to say, hey, in our classrooms, the phones are going to be turned off and put away, period. So on my campus, I tell the kids, sure, you can have your phone on campus. And there's a couple, you know, you have your seventh, eighth graders. Some of them have phones, some of them don't. But the ones that have phones, they can bring them, but they're either in their lockers, turned off, or they're in their backpack, turned off. They're not allowed to have them on. If they go out, if the phone does go on and my teacher hears it, we hear buzzing, whatever it is, the phone is confiscated, it's taken to the office, the parent has to pick it up. But I haven't had that happen since last year. So this whole school year, I've gone without any phones going off in classes because they know my policy. And the parents support it. I've had parents say, you don't even need to take your phone to school because why? You can't have it on anyway. So if I need to get a hold of you, I'll call the school. The school, we're full of phones.
What a novel idea, right?
Yeah, right? So if they need to get a hold of their kids, they can call the school. They don't need a phone. And they have, you know, they all have laptops. My science curriculum is online curriculum. We have laptops. We have devices on campus. So yeah, they're in front of a screen, but not all day. You know, science has screens. They're on their laptops, but my English classroom is screen free. My history classroom is screen free. So it's give and take when it comes to screens. And I'm not anti-screen. I'm not anti-device. I'm not anti-phone. I think there's a place for it, but the classroom is not for us.
I see you answered it because I was going to ask you what your stance was. You're right. I was going to ask you what your stance was on other devices like laptops, interactive boards. You kind of said it, like it is integrated where Apple.
Right. So there definitely is a place for technology in the classroom. Every middle schooler here on my campus has a laptop, and it's taken out with instructor permission, and it's used under supervision with the instructors, with my teachers. My science curriculum is under Amplify Science, so they have to have a device out to get that curriculum. My geometry curriculum is online. So there's things like that they have to use them. So there is a time and a place, and it's under teacher supervision. The teachers are up walking around, looking at screens, making sure the kids are doing what they're supposed to be doing with their screens. And there's moments where the kids are tempted to, you know, pull up a game or whatever it is. And yeah, the teacher will catch it and say, hey, let's get off that game and get on the right program. You know, they're kids. You have to be lenient. But within the boundaries of it, they do pretty well. They follow the rules to the best they can. So there is a place for my smart boards. I have smart boards in every classroom. You know, there's a place for technology. I'm not all for a one-to-one device in the lower grades. That's our kids need the connection with teachers. So kinder from fourth grade, no devices. They have the smart boards, but in terms of having a laptop in front of kindergartners, no. They need that connection with the teacher. They need to be writing with a pencil. They need to build those motor skills. So that's where the cell phones come in. And you have parents that will say, well, all the friends have a device. All the kids have an iPhone. So I want to get my kid an iPhone because all of his friends have one. So there's that peer pressure of parents wanting their kids to have what other kids have. And I'm the first one to say, my own daughters, I have a 17-year-old now, and she got her first iPhone at 16. So they got what's called a Gab phone. Gab Wireless makes a beautiful cell phone for kids that is internet free. There's no apps, there's no social media, and it allows students to text and call the contacts in their phone. So my daughter can text and call me, some friends that are in it, mom. But she does have access to any app or any social media or the internet. And then my girls both know when you turn 16, that's when you can get your iPhone. Because you're driving at that point, it does become used.
It's called Gab?
Gab Wireless. Check it out.
I got to check this out for my own daughters.
Yeah. Gab Wireless is an amazing company. They, the founder of the company really founded his company based on the fact that he wanted something better for his kids. Knowing about the dangers of social media, knowing about the dangers of giving such a powerful device to a child. I mean, what parent would want to hand a kid a device that gives them access to the world, number one, and allows the world to have access to them? There's 15,000 predators online a day. So why would we give our kids a device that's going to allow those predators access to them? And that's what a smartphone is doing, where a phone like a Gab Wireless phone completely blocked that out. So I believe it's in Instagram reel that talks about 13-year-olds on a group text. Nothing ever good comes from a bunch of 13-year-olds on a group text.
Nothing.
So I don't know why, why are parents giving them phones and saying, here, be up all night on your phones, group texting each other. Nothing good is going to come out of that. Somebody's going to get hurt. They're going to get bullied. They're going to be excluded. There's all kinds of stuff that's going to happen. And to come to think of it, not much, as a school administrator, not much really comes out of a group of moms on a group. Yeah.
I think I was a high school vice principal for a while, and the social media can be very damaging. And I think what I'm so nervous about is the self-esteem, the lack of self-esteem that sometimes these apps and social media can sometimes encourage in our students and in our kids. And I'm really worried about that in the long term. So I'm glad there are, companies out there that are trying to combat that in a way, so that we're not trying to say no technology, but responsible use of it. But it is a concern of mine,
It's definitely. Yeah. I actually do see the past 2 years. I've seen such a change with parents. They are starting to talk more about it, You are seeing. I'm seeing less and less students getting phones at an early age because there's people like us who are talking about it and making it a conversation and educating parents about the dangers of social media. Because the more they know about what's going on online, the more they're going to think twice about it and say, well, wait a second, just because Jimmy over there has a smartphone doesn't mean I need to get my kid a smartphone. I can think about it and really make a conscious decision to talk to my child about, hey, just because Jimmy has it doesn't mean you're going to get it too. I'm the parent. I can make that decision. And this is what we're going to do as our family. So, and you're seeing more families take that stance of holding off on social media, holding off on smartphones until either eighth grade or high school. There's a big platform out there called Wait Till Eighth. And Wait Till Eighth is a movement to encourage parents to wait till eighth grade or after to give their kids a smartphone.
Well, wait till eighth. And I think also just as for the teacher in the classroom, it's very hard to go against TikTok and all these other apps, which, like you said earlier, are designed psychologically to be distracting, addictive. It's just hard. So I think, I can definitely understand your stance. Absolutely. So my question is, at your school, are there any programs, activities, initiatives that you've introduced to your school that you're exceptionally proud of because they've had such a great impact on your school community?
Oh, gosh. I think when it comes to programs on campus, we have so many great little programs on campus. I'm not a big campus. I have 250 kids total. So I have preschool for eighth grade, and that makes my average class size about 18, which is a great little, we're a medium-sized school. 250 kids isn't small, but it is manageable. And in terms of programs, I love our student council and the work that our middle school student council does for our campus as a whole, building school community and always having programs and assemblies that support the campus. So I really love the student leadership options that we have on campus through our student council and allowing our younger students on campus, being a preschool for eighth grade campus, our younger students are always involved with our upper grade students through student council with a little buddy, big buddy program. And the student council, like I said, having constant programming for the school in terms of spirit assemblies, different theme weeks, fun weeks on campus that their dress up weeks, whatever it is they're doing, competitions on campus where we're getting classes to compete against each other for different reasons. Most of it's fundraising for philanthropy, whether it's cancer research or the Ronald McDonald House, which is right down the street from us. Things like that, that build community. But I'm really proud of our student council. They work hard to constantly think of new ways to keep the school environment positive. And that rolls into a positive school culture, is having a group of kids that are excited to be here and run a student council program or an ASV program that benefits the school.
It seems like you're really giving voice to students.
Yeah, it's a student, it's a student-run program. So they have their meetings just like they would any student council. We have a president, a vice president, treasurer, secretary, athletic chair, programming chair. They all work together. And, I'm pretty sure every school has something like that on campus. If they don't, they should, because it does give a voice to the students. And they get so excited to take ownership of the program. So they come to me and say, hey, can we do the Spirit Week? Absolutely. What's it going to look like? Tell me what it's going to look like. What are we going to do as a school? Are we going to have any competitions as a between classes? What are we going to celebrate? All those different things. So they get excited about that.
They get excited because they know Mr. Jolie is going to say yes. We talked about before, it's important, right? So
that's right.
Outside of the standard curriculum, right, that our kids have to learn, what do you think are critical skills, concept, or ideas that our students need today in 2024 to succeed in today's world and beyond 2024, to be honest?
Right. There's definitely the technology factor in there. We're always seeing the technology growth. And, even though I'm a phone-free classroom, I do think it's important for our students to have technology skills. So they're learning all about, every student on my campus has an Office Suite account. So they're learning all through Word, PowerPoint, Excel, Publisher. They have a Gmail. So they're using Google Docs. They're sharing documents. They're learning how to navigate all of those platforms. We have an early coding program. So they're learning about coding. So the technology side of things, I think, we do need to talk about. We do need to get students well-versed in the technology language within boundaries, obviously, but then also focus on the person skills, the personal skills of talking to each other, starting down at an early age here on my campus, every project that our students do, there's always an oral presentation involved with it. So everything is presented orally. And that allows our students to build their confidence as public speakers, teaching them how to stand up in front of a group of peers, organize their thoughts, and give a good speech, or present their, even if they're bringing their little stuffy, they're talking about their stuffy in front of their peers, you know, as a kindergartner or first grader. But everything that they're doing on campus in terms of projects, they're always presenting orally. And that's going to build a skill that they're going to use throughout their life. That's starting it as at an early age. So on top of that, just building good citizens, like I talked about before, teaching them about citizenship, teaching them about kindness, responsibility, all those key assets that we want to release our kids into the high school setting and the college setting, eventually get there, or if they go into a trade, being a confident person and knowing how to communicate effectively. So I even teach a class to my students, to all the students here up in middle schools, just handshake, how to introduce yourself to somebody, how to give a proper handshake. We'd be surprised how many students don't properly give a handshake. You know, so even teaching them a basic skill like that,
real skills,
is so important and setting them up for success. So real skills that schools can focus on and build good citizens and build a student into being a responsible adult.
I love it. So I have two more questions for you, all right? So I'm a firm believer in building up the profession, and I can already tell just by your story that you are. So if you could give a new teacher one piece of advice, let me ask you, for a teacher and for a principal, head of school, what's one piece of advice you would give to a new teacher and to a new principal?
My advice to a new teacher is to don't dwell on the failures. You're gonna have days, you're gonna have moments in the classroom that aren't gonna work out. It's important to move forward and move forward quickly. You're gonna have to pivot. And that's one of the traits of a really good teacher, is knowing when to pivot and pivot quickly. Lessons aren't gonna work, different things happening in the classroom are gonna fall apart, but knowing how to pick up the pieces quickly and reorganize and present the lesson in a new way, or go home and think about it and say, okay, tomorrow I'm going to do this differently. And think of it as a positive learning experience and not get down on yourself. Always stay positive, because it's, as human beings, we unfortunately, I think, have a natural self-talk that can be damaging. So always talking positive to yourself and encouraging yourself and finding people around you, like your mentor teachers or your school or your principals, that are going to encourage you in a positive way to always keep going day after day and finding new things to be positive about. But don't be hard on yourself. You have to laugh. You know, you have to laugh at the kids, laugh at yourself, and know that you're going to fail, but pick up the pieces quickly and pivot. For a new administrator, it's the same thing. You know, I always tell people, being a school administrator is like playing 52 card pickup.
That's a great analogy.
Every day, the 52 cards are going to go up in the air, and we don't know where they're going to land, how they're going to land, and you have to be okay with that. Mm-hmm. You have to be okay with walking in the school door every morning, not knowing what you're going to get. And, you know, be positive about it and move forward. You know, you're going to have hard conversations. You're going to have difficult situations at a school site. You know, anytime you're dealing with students and the parents, there's going to be challenges. But be honest, be truthful, and just know that you're doing the best you can for your students. And as long as you take that line, and everybody around you knows that you're going to make the best decisions you can for your students, everybody around you is going to appreciate that and trust you on that. So if the people around you see that you're doing the best you can for the kids, I think you're going to have the best support you can.
That's some very, very relevant pieces of advice right there. And I would not disagree at all. So if listeners want to learn more about your work or contact you, how should they?
I think the best way, I'm on the only social media I have is Instagram. That's Oak Ridge Principal. So my school is called Oak Ridge Private School. So I'm called the Oak Ridge Principal. That's my Instagram. I don't have any other social media. I'm not on TikTok. I will not do that. I'm a role model of my kids as well. I've told them TikTok is a mess. Don't do it. Snapchat, won't do that one either. So Instagram is the only one I'm on. I'm happy to share my email if a principal wants to reach out or a teacher wants to reach out. That's sjoley@openschool.org. Probably in the podcast messaging, you'll probably have that on there as well.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, those two ways are the best way to get hold of me. I'm happy to help anybody, any new teacher out there, if they need somebody to talk to. School administrators are a rare breed that we're happy to help anybody.
Yes.
I think, we're out there to better the educational community. That's what we do every day. And it's my school, it's the other schools, other school administrators, and you all talk, you all support each other. So that's the best way to grow a good school community, is to help each other out.
I really want to thank you for coming on to the show. I mean, you've been just a tremendous, I get so much just from these conversations, especially as a school administrator, to talk to another school administrator. So I want to thank you so much for coming on. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. This has been a blast. I feel like I've talked a lot, but hopefully the people that are on the other side hearing this got some little tidbits of gold here. Just know that, any parents out there that hear this, just talk to your administrator and, sit down and get to know them, because they're great people. They really are. And if they're on a school site, that means they really care about their kids. And these kids are all my kids, all 250 of them. They're all my kids, and I want to see the best for them. So, any parents out there, give your administrator a pat on the back and say thank you for being here, because they really work hard every day to make sure their school sites are doing the best they can.
I couldn't say it better myself.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Course. All right, everyone, until we meet again, stay inspired, stay positive, and have the best day ever.